Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 15. Still getting over this thing. Still getting over this little sickness. But I got a question, because I might be a little under the weather in terms of my voice, in terms of coughing a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Could be the allergies. I don't know. But what the heck is Gibson guitar smoking? I mean, what are they thinking over there right now? I downloaded the Mark Agnesi terrorist clip. That's what I call it, because it looks like the man's being held at gunpoint, or they're gonna try and cut his head off or something if he doesn't say what they want him to say. It's a very strange video. For those of you who don't know, Gibson released a video and has since taken it down from their YouTube channel. Two things jump out at me at that video: the fact that they said, like, "You've been warned." It's funny, I initially thought, yeah, that's a poor choice of words. They said, "You've been warned," like, here we are, we're coming for you. We're going to come compete and take back what's ours, which is the love and hearts of guitarists everywhere. But then we find out today they're actually suing Dean Guitars, Dean and Luna Guitars, which is the same company. And then there's this other, I think I might do a reaction video to the actual clip itself, but I want to figure out a way to do it without getting in trouble from YouTube for letting Gibson put up a copyright claim against me, because in there they say, like, "We've been innovating for 125 years. Mark Agnesi then goes on to name all the innovations on the Les Paul and the SG. And skips right over the fact that he says they've been innovating for 125 years, yet he points to the carved top on the maple top, the humbuckers, the this, the that, all the innovations, none of which have taken place in my lifetime, or probably yours. I don't know how old the oldest person that listens to the Tone Junkie Podcast is, but I have a clue from the analytics. We're all a bunch of dudes between, like, 25 and 55. And most of us are in our 30s in that, like, it's really heavy, like 30 to 45, according to the analytics, if I can trust it for this podcast. I don't really know how reliable podcast analytics are in terms of the demo. But this is a bunch of dudes listening to this podcast who are into guitar and stuff. And Gibson, while they want to claim on one hand that they've been innovating for all this time, they haven't done it in my lifetime. And you want to know something? They haven't even done it in Mark Agnesi's lifetime, the guy in the video. One of the things they point out is, like, oh, the headstock, the matchbook headstock, which is not so innovative. There are jazz guitars that have, like, similar movements. I mean, yeah, theirs is now iconic. There are definitely older guitar jazz box things. I mean, Gibson just goes back a long way. You're never going to prove that someone else was making something 125 years ago. Of course, I mean, not to put the brand down, there's a ton of heritage there. It's just, it's very strange now. I'm going to say something politically incorrect for a minute. It's a quote from a movie. I'm not even going to say it because I don't want someone to get offended. But I'll just start by saying, I have a brother who's handicapped. So I grew up with a lot of handicapped kids using this certain word that I wanted to use to describe Gibson. They would use it colloquially. I mean, you know, they would use it with each other, and it was sort of kind of a weird thing that you'll find kids in special needs programs do to each other. They call them each other this word, and it's almost can have like a loving context. Do you remember in what was the movie? Tropic Thunder. When Robert Downey Jr. says, "You never go full," that's Gibson right now. That is Gibson right now. They're full on cray right now. They're cray cray is what the kids are saying for crazy. They're really going nuts. Now, I think I know what they're thinking. You might be thinking what we're all thinking, right? Which is, HW, does Gibson seriously believe that anyone who was gonna buy a Gibson thought, "Nah, I don't really care about a Gibson. I'm just really after that iconic single cut design, so I'll buy a Dean instead"? I think if you do, nobody thinks that. Not even Gibson is dumb enough at this point to think that. I think what they're doing, though, is looking at brands that are not like PRS, that haven't made significant changes to the styles of the bodies and stuff. They're just sort of similar, or they're pretty similar. And I really think for them, they're looking at Dean going, here's a brand with fairly wide distribution into the mom and pop music markets. Gibson knows that Guitar Center is in trouble. They can't bet the farm on Guitar Center staying alive. So if you ask me, Gibson's got to put themselves back in some of these smaller music chains. They've got to get themselves accessible in some of these other, maybe these regional chains, or just sort of the more local shops, the mom and pop places that you see kind of around the country. Because Guitar Center, Gibson has to acknowledge, and I'm sure they do at some level, that they're going to be hurt real bad if Guitar Center goes under or files bankruptcy or goes even later on the bills, which was a big thing. You know, Guitar Center it owes Gibson a ton of money. So I think they're making some adjustments for the future and probably looking at this as going, well, if we go after Dean and maybe if we go after ESP and they're probably looking at something like, we're probably not going to see them go. Ibanez, I think tomorrow could make a guitar that looks exactly like Les Paul. I don't think Gibson's going to waste the money fighting Ibanez, but they know how small Dean is. They know Dean is not a huge company and Dean's not going to go toe-to-toe with them right now. So I think they're going to fight this little battle. It's not going to be like PRS. You know, Paul was fighting for the future of his company and being able to stay iconic and stay PRS. And make the guitars they love. And really, in the player's perception, like for me, I now own a PRS single cut. I consider them to be some of the best single cut guitars out there. Do they sound exactly like a vintage Les Paul? No, but neither does what Gibson makes. I mean, maybe you could spend $5,000-$6,000 getting a Gibson that sounds like a vintage Les Paul, but not the stuff off the shelf. But for me, I think this is Gibson looking at the landscape going, okay, we've got some guys who are competing with Epiphone, right? And we as Gibson need to understand that, like, we should be the only ones who are allowed to copy ourselves. And so let's stick it to some of these other guys who have pretty decent distribution in some of these other parts of the market. And then let's get Epiphone in there. That's my prediction. I think we're going to see Gibson in the future change their distribution like requirements, and I think we're going to see more stuff where more stores that just carry Epiphone. And I think Gibson, because I mean, Dean doesn't compete with Gibson; they compete with Epiphone. Dean has always had some of the higher end models, but those are really for like, you know, people who are really into like. You know, very specific players that use Deans, Leslie and Dimebag, and you know, the handful of Dean players that you could even say their name has some brand equity. But Dean's not known as being like a guitar company with huge endorsees or something. So I think this is more of a play for them to help Epiphone. And I bet they're going like this: hey, guys, look, if we can file a lawsuit, get Dean to stop this, we could probably go in and all the places or go to the distributors that are servicing some of these places where Dean guitars are sold. We can probably convert them to Epiphone dealers. We might be able to sell them. Maybe we could lower some minimum requirements on initial buy-ins. They could probably lower them to whatever Dean's level is. They probably could say, you can be an Epiphone only dealer if you do this, this, and this. And I bet in their mind, they're like, if we could pick up an extra 6% of Epiphone sales through opening up a new level of distributors that's maybe on Dean's level, bing, bang, boom, there you go. I think the other thing they're thinking is in stores like Guitar Center, there are some of these guitars in the student section. And I think Gibson is probably looking around going, wait a minute, we have some Epiphones that belong in the student section. We have these starter packs and this is a way we can get rid of some of the clutter on the shelves. And Guitar Center, when they don't, when there's a hiccup in Dean production because they can't get any more of these Les Pauls, Guitar Center will hopefully buy more Epiphones. And the thing you got to understand about Gibson's success right now is guitar manufacturers are right now really de-incentivized to actually make guitars that people want to buy, like right now. Like Guitar Center really doesn't have... Think about how guitars go from announcement to market, right? The fastest way is if Guitar Center holds gear in the back, Gibson and Fender have to swear them to secrecy. I'll tell you this doesn't work, and I'll tell you why this doesn't work. I was able to buy two Marshall amplifiers this year 2 days before they were announced at NAMM. And as soon as I bought them and put them on Instagram, the internet didn't blow up or anything. They just look like normal Marshalls. Another shop reached out to me and put, oh my gosh, we have those. Guitar Center selling them already? Ugh. My Gibson rep or my Marshall rep would be so pissed to hear about this. And so what's happening is Fender and Gibson and all these guys, they're involved in such an archaic model of distribution. We all have the internet. Most of us are buying most of our gear on Reverb.com. The trouble is Gibson is addicted to the cheap drug of distributor cash. And so here's how they operate. And this is something that got them into big trouble before. And it's the real reason why they have to release so many new models right now, now that the company is trying to turn a page, and not just improve quality. I think they're going to try to improve quality. I think maybe they have improved quality, but we're going to get more into what they should do in a minute or two. But Gibson is addicted to the cheap drug that is distributor cash. One of the reasons you see companies like Fender or Gibson in this case, they turn over models is because their numbers really depend on Guitar Center and these big chains buying a lot of guitars. So here's what they want to do. They really are trying to create models that Guitar Center will be able to move so that Guitar Center will stack their shelves with guitars. Gibson then also goes to Guitar Center and pays for displays, end cap things, just like a supermarket. There's perks and stuff built into these distributor agreements. And this is because Gibson does well when Guitar Center doesn't just sell a lot of Gibsons, but when they heavily stock up on Gibsons. And one of the problems we saw in 2009 was that the purchasing of all of these guitars was outpacing the amount of guitars that were meaning the distributors were buying more guitars than they were selling. And this puts the distributor at a real disadvantage because imagine this. I'm watching, there's a couple Sur guitars online right now that I'm watching on Reverb, and they're a good example of this. Excuse me. I told you I had a little something. There's probably six or seven of these Sur guitars that are about $3,200. They're too expensive for me, too rich for my blood. But these guitars are JM model Surs, and they are one of a kind. I mean, they just made two of like every kind, and they were ordered custom by Matt's Music. Now, Matt's Music is a big Sur dealer. I always look at their stuff on their website and on Reverb. They basically made the coolest looking JMs ever. They did this Fire Mist Gold, antique Fire Mist Gold with roasted neck. They did a P90 version and a humbucker version. And for their humbucker version, they went ahead and did thornbuckers, which is amazing. Then fast forward literally a week later, they get in the silver ones, these Inken silver guitars. Same thing. We've never seen an aged silver with black guard. They did same thing. Thornbucker on some models, P90s on the other, all black with silver antique roasted board, $3,200. Now, After that, they did the most gorgeous blue color with the reddish tortoiseshell guard, and they did pink, and they even went to Sir and said, can you put some mastery tremolos on here like a real jazz master? And they did a couple of those models. Here's the thing. These things have been sitting on Reverb, and I've been seeing them put them on sale, and they can't move them. Now, I'm not picking on Matt's music here. I love his guitars, and I'm kind of on the fence about buying one because they're a little much. But here's what happens. Sir records that sale, and they do well when Matt's music buys it. But now Matt's music is on the hook because Sir, even if they give Matt's music 90 days to pay, 60 days to pay. See, these are called net terms. These are terms that reflect the buying cycle. So whenever a store like Target or Walmart or Guitar Center buys merchandise from the manufacturer, they don't say, send me the stuff and I'll pay you, here's my credit card. No. That's a type of a sale, and we won't get into all these terms. It's their distribution terms and stuff. There are some industries that work that way, but most do not. And if a customer has no credit, it probably works that way. You got to pay for the goods up front. But for someone like Guitar Center, it's like the old Donald Trump quote: "If you owe the bank a lot of money, the bank owns you. But if you owe the bank a whole lot of money, you own the bank." GC has Guitar Center on the hook. I'm sorry, GC has Gibson on the hook because Gibson's got to figure out a way to continue to sell guitars to Guitar Center and at the same time keep Guitar Center selling guitars so that the cash flow comes to Guitar Center and can pay Gibson. Kind of like the United States taking on way too much debt. But them thinking, hey, as long as we got the tax revenue to pay the interest, we don't got to worry about this till way later. Stores like Matt's Music will probably who are top dollar Sir dealers and move a lot of Sir guitars probably have very good terms with Sir and probably say, hey, yeah, I can. You pay us. There's no way it's less than 30 days, but it might be as far out as 60 days. And so Matt's Music has the opportunity to go ahead and go on credit, sort of. They sort of buy these $3,500 guitars. I'm sure they buy them for, they probably need to make at least 40% margin. So I'm guessing they buy those guitars for $2,300 dealer cost. Maybe 24, maybe 25, I don't know. But somewhere south of 2,500. Just south of 2,500. I'm going to say they buy them for 2,400. They sell them for 33. They have 30 days to pay, and that means they've got 30 days or 60 days or whatever for them to sit on their shelf, for them to advertise them, and then boom, someone buys them, gives them the money. Matt's Music takes the difference and sends the rest of the money back to Sir. Who makes the most money when you buy a Sir? The store or Sir? It's always Sir. But then you go back to Sir and you go, and they go, hey, my wood guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and all the people we pay. And maybe that guitar actually in labor and everything costs John Sir and JS Technologies. Maybe it costs them $1,200 to put together. I don't know. I'm just guessing. Here's why all that's important. When Guitar Center expands and opens new stores or closes stores, this is very bad news for Gibson. This is now more inventory spread across less stores. So Guitar Center needs to plan to have things hitting the shelves, specials and all these things, which is why Gibson needs to turn over the old models quickly. And that's why when they took over the company, they released new models partway through the year. Right now, we're seeing a lot of these Gibsons hit the shelves, even though they were announced back at last NAMM. It's not because they didn't have them production ready. If the problem was capacity, we would have seen a limited number of these new Gibsons hit the shelves, and then we would have seen them sell out, and Gibson, and the thing would have been, Gibson is now, the story Gibson would have told has been, Gibson is now slowing down. They're making the guitars better. They're really taking their time. Guitar Center can't keep them in stock. Except here's what that would mean. Guitar Center would then be sitting on a bunch of 2017 inventory, and they wouldn't know what to do with it. They'd be sitting on 27 and 2018 inventory, and everyone would want the new models, and they'd look at the old models and go, don't buy the old models, they're not as good. See, Gibson can't tell the story about how much better their guitars are in 2019 until they really, really get rid of all that old stuff in Guitar Center. And that's what these last 6 months have been about. Since the announcement in January, they said, hey guys, here we are. They're really between a rock and a hard place. Here we are. We're here to get excited, get you excited about these new models. But we can't be so excited that you are convinced every guitar on the shelf at Guitar Center right now is complete trash. We can't tell that story. We can't actually come out and tell you that Gibson has been run into the ground by the former owners, but we're here right now to resurrect it like a phoenix coming out of the ashes. See, that would be the story. And what I thought they were doing was about to tell that story. Now I'm not so sure. See how I, sir, not so sir. Anyway, now I'm not so sure that they even get it. I'm really not so sure they even get it. If Gibson wants to be the most loved guitar company in America right now, they need to put a face on it like they did. Mark Agnesi needs to go on YouTube, and every single day, Mark Agnesi needs to interview all of the builders, sanders, and guitar finishers. They need to go get pictures from those guys' childhood, and they need to tell the story of how every, I mean it, make 24-minute videos for YouTube that are all about Chet, the sander, Dennis, the painter, and just go through and tell the story of how Dennis, when he was six, grew up near Nashville, listening to the Grand Ole Opry on the radio, hearing those guitars, and then later, just make it up if it's not true. Who cares? People love a good story. And then he heard the Grand Ole Opry with his grandfather, who was an old chicken picker and knew all the old Chet Atkins stuff. And then one day he went to a guitar store and he saw the iconic Gibson that he had seen while his grandfather, when his grandfather took him to the Grand Ole Opry. And he heard that sound and knew only a Gibson is good enough. My God, how have they not hired HW? It's really ridiculous. If you make 20 of those videos, and you really are telling the story that everyone at Gibson, from the guy unloading the wood on the off the truck to the master builders, to the quality control people, if you get the quality control people out there with their rulers and their measurements, the guy running the pleck machine, and Gibson does videos on how to pleck a guitar, how we set up a Gibson, how to be authentic. They could call the series How to Be Authentic. And it could just chronicle all the ways that they've changed production to make these things more authentic. Again, if it's not true, you just make it up. I mean, who's going to know that they did? I mean, maybe the stuff, now I'm not telling them to lie, but I'm saying maybe they've had 3-point quality control for 40 years. Okay, consumers don't know that. So tell the story of how every Gibson now gets 3-point quality control, not just from Gibson employees, but from Gibson players, but from Gibson, from Dennis, who heard the sound as a child through his radio, and when he grew up and he saw Chet, and then he joined the bands and went around, went on tour, and he heard the iconic sound, and ever since he was 3 years old to now, only a Gibson's good enough. Tell the story how when you play a Les Paul, you're not playing a guitar they built today. You're playing a piece of history. You're playing a piece of rock and roll history. How when you hold a Gibson, the only thing stopping you from writing a song as good as the Beatles, from playing as well as Jimmy Page, is you. They should be telling people to be authentic, play authentic. It's a good slogan. But I have no idea what they're thinking right now, which is, they're doing the smart thing. They're doing the thing they have to do, which is they've waited 6 months to get these new models out. In 2020, I wouldn't expect a ton of new models from Gibsons. I would just expect a real sort of restatement of what they released in 2019, sort of show. And I would expect a couple new models and a couple new variations. They have some amazing models coming out in the SG family with the Vibrola tailpieces and the P90s. Oh, they're just beautiful, beautiful guitars. I hope they're well made. You know, I don't know. You know, Rhett Schell was on YouTube. They gave him a guitar. It looked like it was well set up. It should have been perfect, though. Honestly, if you're going to give a guitar to a YouTuber like that and you're trying to make the statement, hey, it's worth giving you a guitar to repair our image so that it goes in your YouTube stuff, I mean, they should do that. That's what's weird to me about this whole thing. If I was Gibson, I might work with some YouTubers, but I probably wouldn't. I think what they don't understand is this. A guy like Rhett Schell has a lot of value as a YouTuber, but Gibson has everything they need to just go on YouTube themselves and tell the story. So like, yeah, I would send a guitar to Rhett, and I would send a guitar to Pete Thorne, and I would send a guitar to these other places and have them just be impressed or not. But I really don't see Gibson doubling down on the social media strategy like I thought they would. I thought the whole point of getting Mark was that they were going to, Mark was going to be Mr. Gibson YouTube. And why don't they do history lessons on the guitar? Why don't they, where's all the footage when they got Jimmy Page's Les Paul and measured every single thing? Why isn't that a 30-minute YouTube video? Called like recreating the most iconic guitar in history, recreating the sound of rock and roll. That's what it should be. I don't get what they're doing. The world is simple right now. Make a really great product, go buy Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube advertisements, and people will buy it. There's nothing more to. I just say, listen, if you want to send me $100,000, $150,000, I just gave you the college education on business. I know. I went to a very expensive private university. I went and worked. Here's the real problem. I have worked with two multi-billion dollar corporations. One of them, I worked for their top distributor. So the manufacturer was very into, it's like, I don't know if it's allergies or what. I woke up this morning just dying here. It's a little getting a little hard to speak. I worked for two multi-billion dollar companies, and I'll tell you the one, if you've ever questioned that the little guy has the advantage, that small to medium-sized business is favored in the economy, go spend any time around a really big company. Usually what they've got, it's like Machiavelli. They have distribution deals that take years to negotiate, to get in, to build those relationships, and that's why they're so powerful. But they cannot innovate. They cannot innovate. I would sit in marketing meetings where they'd be discussing a Facebook post for an hour. And here's the problem with that. The Facebook post wasn't even an ad that was going to be paid to have really hit a lot of people. It was just going up on the page organically. And they were discussing for an hour what if this really held the brand identity and if they could do better. And what they didn't seem to get is, if you want to do it better, put it up, stop talking about it, and everyone should be using this time to go make another piece. Because the way social media works, the way it works today is, you don't need to broadcast yourself. You don't need to say, hey, Budweiser, let's make a commercial and let's show it to everybody. What you need to do is actually make like 100 commercials, and you need to keep trying until one hits. And when one hits, when one gets great response and it's successful, and you put money behind it. And you make sure everybody sees the best one. Or you segment the heck out of your audience. But let's not get into that. My point for Gibson is look at JHS. I've been saying on this podcast forever that people, manufacturers just need to go on YouTube and begin to tell their story. And JHS is just telling stories on YouTube. Brian Wampler has a YouTube channel and a Facebook presence where and a podcast where they talk about guitar, not just Wampler stuff, because Gary Vaynerchuk wrote a book telling people to do this. It's the next great opportunity. It's why Tone Junkie is successful. And Brian Wampler read that book and said, okay, I'm Brian Wampler. Nobody knows me. I'm going to change my business by getting everyone's attention for cheaper or free than everyone else. I'm not going to pay Pete Thorne $600 to review my pedal. I might do that too, but what I'll instead do is I'll spend not $600 on Pete Thorne. I'll spend $6,000 getting all the camera equipment and paying a guy for a month or 2 months to come work at my company. And he's not going to make 10 videos. That would be the same as I could just pay Pete for 10 videos. He's going to make 30 pieces of content. And then I'm going to let those go out. And those are going to have way more reach than 10 pieces of content from Pete Thorne. And more than that, they're going to follow Wampler. They're going to want to listen to Wampler and the Chasing Tone podcast and all this stuff, right? Gibson has all the resources they need in the world. They should honestly take the money they're using to sue Dean, and they should go hire. I thought this is Mark Agnesi's job. They should go hire somebody with a camera to run around that factory and just talk about how we sand the guitars, how we finish the guitars, how we pick our wood. Mark Agnesi needs to get on an airplane and he needs to fly to Honduras and go knock on some mahogany trees. Mark Agnesi needs to go to where they mine copper out of the ground and source the most pure copper for the copper wire pickups they're going to put out. Mark Agnesi needs to stop making videos where people have been warned, and he needs to just press play and talk about the guitars. It's so simple how to make money right now if you make something. All you do is make something, tell people about it. If it's cool, you just keep talking to them. If they like it, you just keep talking to them. If they don't, you don't talk to them. You don't need to convince anyone in the United States, in the world, to buy your product today. Because the ability to reach people is so great that all you need to do is make what you make, talk about it, put it out, look at who responds, and then put money behind targeting those people more. That's it. Fans will come to you. It used to be, if you're a store, think about this. If you're a guitar store, you've got to convince the traffic of that store to come into your store. If you're a restaurant, you've got to convince people in that neighborhood to come to your restaurant. Why? Because you're limited by geography. Gibson's not limited by geography. They have 330 million customers in the United States. How many play guitar? HW. Only 1 in 10 people play guitar. Okay, who cares? They got 30 million people. If I was Gibson and I was Mark Agnesi, you know the next thing I'd do? And I'm going to make a YouTube video because they need to hear HW's three marketing strategies that Gibson should employ. Here's what I would do if I was Gibson. I would create a series of videos that explain and that show that Mark Agnesi is, and the new CEO, I would put one more face on this, maybe. There's three guys. Mark, the new CEO, and some guy who's like an, I guess it's supposed to be Mark, who's like an expert in vintage stuff. But somebody else, some young kid or something, I don't know. Get some praise and worship guy, to be honest. That's the other part of the market they're missing. And I would send, and I would just do 30 videos, like a million pieces of content on how they've improved Gibson, how they are so dedicated to Gibson. Hey, look what we started doing with the pickups. We found that if you do this with the pickups, here's the old method of winding that we started using again. Or here's a technique that almost, I can't even show you the technique, but I'll just describe it. Or here, this lady who's been winding pickup for 50 years is such a wealth of knowledge. We've had her train all the pickup guys. We're discovering techniques that were lost by going back and really exploring and analyzing these old guitars. And I would go on Facebook and YouTube, and I would and Instagram, and I would market that content. And Facebook lets you do this, Instagram lets you do this. I would market that content at anyone who lets who I would say, Facebook, target this video. I want the most amount of videos viewed, video views, to anyone who likes or is interested in PRS guitars, Fender guitars, Collings guitars, Dean guitar, any guitar company that I feel like competes with me. I would target my videos that don't sell anything, but that tell the story. Gibson's back. Play authentic. We're making them better than they've ever been made before. 125 years of authenticity now culminates with the greatest guitars we've ever produced. And for the right money, guitars better than the vintage ones. They need to put out a $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 Les Paul, and they need to say this. They need to say, ladies and gentlemen, we will make so few of these guitars. We have spared no expense. We have put an unfathomable amount of effort and time into making these guitars. We've put way more into these guitars than we could ever get back. They should be priced at $30,000 with the amount of people who have labored and done everything. It takes us 2 months to build it. It costs $20,000. And if you just show that level of crazy, that level of obsession, and you just tell that story to people, you don't need to then ask them to buy a guitar. You don't need specials at Guitar Center. You don't even need Guitar Center. You can sell that $20,000 Gibson outside of any distributor. You can sell a direct-only model where they go crazy and a limited edition thing, and you could sell it direct from your website if you want to keep the stuff. If you want to support your distributors, you put it through a distributor, a select group of distributors, but you let the distributors know, hey, we'll give you 20% on this, but no more, because our content is gonna pre-sell all these. You're basically just going to take a phone call. We're going to send it to you, and then you're going to hand it to the customer. Like, you're not even going to, it's not going to sit on a shelf, nothing. I don't know. It's so simple. I'm over here in Nashville. I should go over there and like find Mark Ignesi's office at the headquarters over here in Gibson and go sit down and I don't know, maybe tell these buffoons how to do their job, because they're just stinking up the joint. It's so freaking easy. It's so freaking easy. Are you serious, Gibson? Are you serious? Y'all need to get authentic, for real. Y'all need to stop trying to sell guitars, and you need to be about the stuff you're talking about. You need to be about honoring 125 years of heritage. You need to be about making the best guitars out there today. You need to be about having some humility and coming to the dance and saying, hey guys, we know, man, we know. You guys think you saw some ugly stuff? We saw behind the curtain. It was worse than you could have imagined. But we're making changes. And not only are we making changes, we've made changes. And we believe we're about to produce the best guitars than anyone's ever made. And you can listen to this podcast for free, Gibson, and you can steal all this stuff. I ain't even mad at you. My name's HW. Thanks for listening. HW out.